Welcome to Tech Marketing Trends, the podcast where we delve into the strategies, experiences, insights that shape the dynamic world of sales and marketing in the tech sector. I'm your host, Jacob Lauenbrand, and I'm the CEO of Bright Vision. And in today's episode, we're diving into the fascinating world of body language, exploring how nonverbal cues can make or break our efforts to connect, communicate effectively, and lead with confidence. And joining us to talk about this is a master of nonverbal communication, David Schneer, who's the CEO and body language master trainer at the Merrill Institute. And David has dedicated his career to understanding the nuances of nonverbal communication, from the subtle signals we send with our posture and gestures and the powerful impact of our facial expressions. I'll let you introduce yourself. So without further ado, let's welcome David Schneer to the Power of Nonverbal Communication episode. David, it's an honor to have you with us here today.
Thank you. I'm excited to do this and very grateful that you invited me.
Yeah, and I'm so happy you accepted. So I'm excited about you giving us your short short background story and what you're up to. And you have done a lot of stuff in your career. So yeah, would be interesting to hear a little bit more about that for our listeners as well.
So as we were getting to know each other before this session, I mentioned to you that I do several things. The main thing that I do is I run a company called Merrill Research. And that's a company that was formed in 1986 to basically help mostly very large companies bring new products to market and to hone their, their strategic communications, like their marketing, their branding, their naming, their logos. We basically evaluate ideas, whether it's products or messages. And we're often put in a position to have to tell somebody that their baby is ugly. And when we conduct this research, one of the things that makes us unique is that we not only conduct qualitative research, but we use nonverbal analysis in our interviewing, not only to encourage respondents to speak, to really try and understand what it is they're telling us. And I can been doing this long enough, Jacob, to tell you that most of the time when I'm talking to folks, what comes out of their mouth is not what their bodies say. And so I formed, while I'm conducting this research, I formed the Merrill Institute for Nonverbal Intelligence to train people in the techniques that I use in my practice and research. So really, the research and the body language go hand in hand. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. Fantastic. So let's start there and you know, continue on that track there, because I think it would be interesting to just understand a little bit about your experiences and some background that actually led you to specialize in the field of nonverbal communication and so forth.
Well, if you look at my LinkedIn profile, you'll see I've been around a long time. And, you know, I started off my career as a journalist for the Los Angeles Times. And that really started my career in observation. I then went on to not only do journalism, but I then went to study literature at Cal. And one thing was pretty clear with me is that I could research and I could write. And that parlayed itself into a research career at Regis McKenna. And when I started researching back then and talking to people, I really began to notice their bodies were telling me something very different. And kind of like a lawyer might, I have a sixth sense about people, okay? But it wasn't until a couple decades ago I began to study nonverbal intelligence. Now I could not only identify what it was I was seeing, but also teach people that as well. And it's just having been around people and conducted thousands of interviews and focus groups all over the world that had led me to a unique position, really, where we're conducting research and we're also analyzing the body. Even when we're talking on Zoom right now, I can begin to see a whole host of things about you that the untrained eye might not.
Super interesting. And especially when we now are conducting so many meetings over Zoom or Teams or whatever virtual platforms we're working on. So if we dive into that a little bit, in your experience, what are the key nonverbal cues that people should pay attention to in order to read others' intentions or feelings more accurately? Can you give us a little bit of an introduction there?
Yeah, you might be surprised at my answer, but actually the most honest part of the body is the feet.
Feet?
The feet.
Okay.
The feet. Feet are always, always pointed in the direction that the body wants to go.
Uh-huh.
So when you get an opportunity to meet with people, you want to check out the position of their feet. Their feet are pointed right at you. That's generally a good sign. If the feet are askew and pointed toward the door or an exit, it's an indication they may be uncomfortable. Certainly, there's a lot to be said for the way a person uses their hands or not. The thumb is a very reliable indicator of the level of confidence that somebody has. When the thumb is out, they're very confident. But if you start to talk to somebody, Jacob, and they close their thumbs like this, it's an indication that they're disagreeing or they're not, something's not right. Okay, you're not quite sure what it is. That's your job, is to find that out. But that's a telltale indication. When you're talking with somebody and all of a sudden they begin to tilt their head, that's a really good sign. That means they're highly engaged. So these subtle nuances these are things you'll begin to see as I help identify them. Another thing you're going to see, and I guarantee you'll see this when we're done with this session, but contempt. Contempt is part of one of the seven micro expressions that you'll see on somebody's face. And those seven micro expressions are joy and happiness, fear, disgust, surprise, anger, happiness. I said that, I think. There's a neutral position, right? And then contempt. Contempt is an asymmetrical smile. It looks like this. If you have teenagers or kids, you will see them do this. What this means is one of two things. It either means that they completely disagree with what you're saying, or they're feeling superior to you. But those are some of the main things that you'll see. There's thousands upon thousands of facial muscles that contract. You get that boiled down to seven, and it's, if you're human, you're going to show these seven emotions. And by the way, you cannot control these emotions. These are involuntary outbursts or leakage of emotions. And we also train to look at the face. You know, the face is also a place where people can lie and feign, right? When I was growing up, you know, my folks would say, wipe that smile off your face, or pretend that you're happy to go see your uncle, you know, that kind of stuff. And so we learn how to, you know, contort our face so that we hide our emotions. That's why we want to concentrate on the lower part of the body and see if somebody's leaning in, because we lean into things we like or lean away from things we don't like. So I don't know, Jacob, we could go on for hours and hours. I teach about 100 body language positions and interpretations, but some of the folks that have trained me, well, they have databases of 500-600 different types of body movements that only very highly trained people would be able to do this. There's only a handful of people that could do this.
I suppose we can find the highly trained ones in maybe interrogation or police situation, things like that, as well as poker players, I suppose. But for us who is in sales or marketing or leadership and really want to think about how we come across or build rapport and all that, how can individuals become more aware of their own nonverbal signals and use this to improve their personal and professional communication, would you say?
You know, that's precisely what happens when you study the nonverbal behavior of others. You begin to realize what you yourself are doing. And so the best way to do that is to pick up material. There's a lot of stuff on the internet, a lot of stuff on my website on things you want to do when you're talking to somebody. For example, you want to be able to put your hands together in what is called a steeple and talk with a steeple, because studies have shown that people who talk like this appear symmetrical And when you appear symmetrical, you also appear more confident. And when you appear more confident, you are also more credible. Okay, so learn to blade, or you can do a half blade if you want. Another effective technique coming right out of Silicon Valley was Steve Jobs. If you ever saw him speak. He did a thing that body language experts called holding the ball. And so he would speak, and he often had like some sort of device in his hand to move his image that he was talking in front of. But he would put his hands together, and they called it holding the ball. And what that does is it helps to give your words concrete form when they come out of your mouth. Former President Bill Clinton had a similar gesture. They called it the Clinton box. He used to talk and move his hands like this. Now, he was trained to do that because when he was Arkansas governor before he became president, he was horrific with his hands all over the place. And the point here is basically you want two things, Jacob. You want symmetry and you want smoothness. You want to get those hands spread apart, out wide, and use them. You don't have to tell Italians this, right? They just do this. Yeah. A lot of it's cultural, right? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. So interesting. And I suppose there is a lot of those tricks and cues that you can use there. And now we're in virtual meetings, you know, and we're, as we are, we always see from the chest and upwards here and so forth, there are less variables you can both read and use in your expression in order to come across as whatever you like to come across as. What's your tip for us working in a remote situation mostly?
Well, it's definitely more difficult, and sometimes you're up against people who do not have good camera hygiene, shall we say. Like, for example, I can see you clearly, and I can see your chest. I haven't seen your hands, but that's okay. But, you know, it'd be far better if we were in person. I'd get more data points to work with, right?
Yeah.
But we're not, and so that doesn't mean, however, that I can't read or listen to what you're saying. For example, let's talk about the shoulders. Oftentimes you ask somebody a question and they don't know, and they'll say, I don't know. That's a symmetrical shrug, okay? That's an indication that they really don't know, okay? Now, when there's asymmetry, and you'll see this, you ask somebody a question and they say they don't know and they lift one shoulder, chances are they do know and they just don't want to tell you. So you got to dig a little deeper and you can see it very visibly.
Yeah.
Or somebody's head begins to sink into their shoulders. It just seems like they're taking on what looks to be like a turtle. And that's what they call it. They call it the turtle. That's a highly reliable indicator that somebody's losing confidence. Or blading. Turning away, leaning back, those are all signs that they're not liking what you're saying. We blade away, we turn away, we lean away from things we don't like. We lean into things we like, right? So those are some basics. One of my mentors, ex-FBI, Joe Navarro, he is somebody you should pick up a book and read what everybody says. And you might even want to have him on your show. Tell him I sent you. Great guy. You want to sometimes watch TV with the sound off because you'll be able to see actors, highly trained actors, by the way, some of whom can fake these expressions, but you'll get a sense of listening with your eyes when you turn the sound off. And then practice a lot of the things. Mirroring is one of the greatest things you can do when you're sitting with somebody. And they lean in, you lean in. If they lean back, you lean back. What that does is it creates psychological comfort. And that's what we're all about, Jacob, is comfort, feeling comfortable. All right?
Yeah, that's interesting. Really good.
So if, let's say you're a negotiator. Mm-hmm. You would like to have in your negotiating room a glass table and swivel chairs. And the reason being is you want to be able to see those lower extremities and you want to be able to see people when they squirm in their seat.
That's
so
a negotiation setup.
It is. And then, I could go on and on and on with the things that you with Zoom, you don't want to be too close. We see people do that. We see people who, have a camera that basically catches this. And so there's all sorts of things that you want to make sure you don't do in Zoom. And also the voice and cathartic exhale. Like if you're in a meeting and you hear, that's a stress reliever. So there's all sorts of things on Zoom you can pick up. Some of these cameras are 4K and they're pretty unforgiving. So they can, sometimes when you speak, Jacob, I can see the pupils on your eyes. And that also tells me something. Like the wider your pupils are, the more engaged you are. Why? Because you really like what you're seeing and you want more of it. You cannot control that.
Wow. So much I didn't know. But if we take one really usual situation, it's of course job interviews, and I'm thinking of myself hiring somebody here, and people puff their CVs a little bit and maybe over-exaggerate a little bit of their things like that. What are the cues an interviewer or a person looking for, is this a trustworthy person that I'm dealing with here? Is there any five tips there?
I can give you some top five for sure. It's a great point because the cost of a wrong hire is about, to fix that, is about 30% of the person's salary. So when you make a wrong hire, that's what happens. You can never really tell when somebody is lying. You just can't. There is a whole science and deception theory, and it's very difficult to tell when somebody's lying for two reasons. One is research has shown that we humans are really poor lie detectors. And also, many of us are really good liars. And you put that combination together and you get people who want to trust. We want to trust. We want to give people the benefit of the doubt. And unfortunately, it gets used against us. So I want you to... Most lies get caught in a confession or when irrefutable evidence pops up. Rarely do these lies get caught in real time. So let's just debunk that myth. But what we can tell you is looking for comfort or discomfort. So you talk to a candidate and all of a sudden you see the hand shaking. If you can see that, okay, that's a reliable indicator that they may not be as confident about this position as they're letting on. The other thing to look for, again, is leaning in. Are they leaning in when you ask them a question about their previous employer and their satisfaction, and they look askance and they turn and come back? That's a red flag, okay? Looking askance, red flag. Shaking is a red flag. Now you got two red flags, okay? Oftentimes, when somebody is articulate, and then they begin to stammer and stutter. Red flag number three, okay? Also, if you can see, again, about the hands are extremely important. They're dead giveaways. You're talking to somebody and they're doing this. If they're creating what looks like friction between their knuckles, what they're really doing is trying to soothe away the stress that this interview is causing them. Four red flags.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to look at the face and see their eye engagement. Are they smiling? Now, the smile, there's lots of smiles, okay? But the two most recognized ones are the social smile, which is just a nod that says, I recognize you. I mean you no harm. I'm on my way. And then there's a genuine smile that includes the eyes. And there's a scientific reason why they include the eyes, because these two muscles are connected. So when you see a candidate that's exercising a smile, that's raising their eyebrows when they talk, they have just that personality that brings you in, that's a good sign, okay? But if you're doing the opposite of that, that's red flag number five. Now, I could go on with red flags if you're sitting in person. But if you're not, if you're on a Zoom interview, you know, the single lift of the shoulder would be an indication of incongruence between what just came out of the mouth and the body going, wait a minute, I don't agree with that. So basically what we're looking for is comfort versus discomfort.
Yeah. And seasoned recruiters say that he typically have, as you say, people are quite, can be quite good at hiding this by you know, controlling themselves and things like that. So he tried to interview them in an unexpected way, maybe in the cafeteria instead of a conference room. The conference room is quite easy to control. Is that something you have experienced? It's easier to, you know, get them a little bit off cue or something like that, and they become more their self.
Oh, it's all about comfort. You know, most of the time I'm interviewing people like this in this format. In fact, later today, while you're asleep, I will have an interview with a technical, very technical respondent, trying to see if they emote like the rest of us do. And so in this venue, I've got to make people feel comfortable. But most of the time, pre-COVID, and now getting back to it, I go into these research labs and facilities where I invite people in, and it's all about making them comfortable. Making sure the temperature is good, making sure they have food or water, making sure they have a good seat. Sometimes we'll ask people in advance, what do you like to drink? No, I like Diet Pepsi. Bam, we'll make sure that's available. It's all about comfort. There's been numerous studies, Jacob, that have shown if you have two gas stations on opposite sides of the road, and you have one gas station that's very poorly lit, with very, very cheap prices. And on the other side of the road, you have a gas station that is extremely brightly lit and has very high prices. Guess where people are going to shop?
I suppose the light attracts them.
Yeah, overwhelmingly. And that is because of the comfort. That's why you go to the same restaurant that you do over and over again, because you just like it, right?
Yeah.
And it's all about that. And once you can establish comfort, when you're sitting with somebody, you begin to mirror with them, like I just told you. If they blade, you blade. If they cross their legs, you cross their legs. You cross your legs. All these techniques work together to make somebody comfortable, because I guarantee you, you will not get anything out of anybody when they are in psychological distress. That's why you really want to treat your employees like they matter.
Yeah,
because you're not going to perform in toxic situations.
And if we turn the situation around, and instead I'm meeting clients, I'm trying to get them to understand why they should engage with us and all that, you know, sales pitching and presenting and you know, trying to map our abilities to their problems and things like that, just like every company do. What's your tips there on creating rapport and trust as fast as possible in a situation like that?
You got to make it all about them. As soon as you make it about you, you're done. And so if you're meeting somebody personally, you really need to get the handshake down. And there's a specific way to do it and a specific way not to do it. Handshakes are cultural. They're different. They differ from state to state in the U.S. and they differ from country to country all over the world. Okay. And so you, first of all, you need to have a clue about this. Okay. There's some gestures you just don't want to use in the Middle East. And you need to recognize that when you go to the Middle East and you open up your briefcase and you whip out the contract and you start to get down to the nitty gritty, they're not going to take that seriously. They're not. That's the wrong thing to do. What they want to do is they want to take a walk with you somewhere, holding your hand, talking about your family to see what kind of man you are or woman you are, okay? Mostly in men in the Middle East, obviously, you wouldn't do that unless you're related to somebody, but it matters, okay? The handshake matters. Secondly is smile. Lift your eyes and smile. That connotes sincerity, okay? You could do that a little more. Smile, open up. Yeah, you got a nice smile. But, and you want to make sure that the distance between you is appropriate if you're in person, okay? there's a social band, and it differs by country. You know, in Latin America, they're all rubbing up against each other. In England, not so much, right? In the UK, it's different. Knowing the culture and knowing a lot about the person, being prepared and being to ask them about themselves is the best way to get someone to talk to you and to like you. I mean, there's tons of other stuff you can do, Jacob. I don't know how much time you have, but I literally have about 40 hours of content.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, we have to refer them to your courses and workshops if they really want to dive into it. But that's really interesting. Yeah, and I expect that very few sell people have actually studied it in that detail, so they know what kind of handshake should I go here for in this meeting and other things like that. But yeah,
this would be extremely valuable in sales, extremely valuable in HR. I'm always amazed at why I don't see more body language practitioners on resumes of HR people. Can you imagine how powerful that would be?
Yeah, exactly. If they can reduce the misfit hires or whatever they call it, you know, with 20%, that would be a huge amount of money for any company.
Yeah. And, you know, let's be honest, you know, narcissists and sociopaths sneak into these companies. They're really smart and adaptable. And you're not going to miss them all or get them all. But, you know, I think there's another level that sneaks in that are so obvious that a trained eye would be, you know, wary of that.
Definitely. And that's so interesting. And can you give an example or share an experience when a nonverbal communication made a significant difference in either a personal or professional situation?
Oh, yeah, this is a great one. It's one of my favorites. I was conducting interviews amongst dealers who resell the printers at one of my largest clients' manufacturers. Okay, you would know this client if I mentioned their name. They're a household name. And so this client, the manufacturer of printers, sells their printers through dealers. Okay, and then they have a line that they sell on Amazon and in other stores, but they had this channel through dealers. And we were trying to understand what is the best channel strategy for my client. And so we did about 30 interviews and we talked to 10 value-added resellers and dealers in LA, New York, Chicago. And I remember hearing negative comments about one of my client's competitors. Everywhere we went, there was something negative about it. So we began to chase this down. And we asked OneVar, we said, you know, you sell other printers other than my clients, right? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, are all the channel programs from these manufacturers the same, or do some do a better job than others? And he goes, oh, no, some do a better job than others. And right then and there, I just said, Acme. I didn't ask him a question. I just threw out the name of the printer manufacturer. It wasn't Acme, but I threw that name out because if I had asked him, what do you think about Acme? I would have given him time to think for an answer, but I just posited a presupposition. I said, Acme. And he reeled back, showed me a sign of disgust, contempt. And when he came back, he said, oh, they're okay. And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, something tells me something about Acme just not right with you. Am I right? And he leans back and he sighs. He goes, yeah, you know, Acme, man, everybody knows them. I don't have to spend money to advertise them, but I'll never do business with them again because they broke deal registration. And what that means, Jacob, is that this VAR wanted to sell 50 of Acme's printers to their customer. Acme cut him out, went around directly to the customer. Had a lesser trained moderator heard that, they would have believed just what came out of the mouth. But we knew that something was up. And it was a significant finding because my client was doing the same thing, you know, violating deal registration. And that had to stop. I could go on and on with examples like that, but there's all sorts of techniques that you can use to get people to emote, and that's what we do.
Wow, thank you for that example. Really, really interesting. And you have shared so much here with us, so thank you for that. So any final comment on, you know, people who are interested to learn more about this, or where they can find more content about nonverbal communication, or maybe check out your stuff, you know, where can they go and where can they read up on these things?
Well, they definitely need to go to Joe Navarro. He's a good guy. He trained me, among other people, and there's a lot to be learned from him. They can definitely come to the MerrillInstitute.com or MerrillResearch.com. We've kind of blended the companies together because there's such a marriage between research and body language and also AI. We're now using AI to back me up in my interviews. So now we have a sense of fault tolerance.
Wow.
If you're familiar with that phrase, right?
Yeah, somewhat.
Well, fault tolerance is used in the computing industry for redundancy and high availability. It means if one system goes down, there's another to take its place. In early England, in the financial world, they would say, we need belt and braces for this deal, meaning pants with belt and suspenders to keep your pants up. It was just another way to make sure the deal was safe. Well, we're doing that in qualitative research by having AI algorithms that are trained to identify facial microexpressions like I'm trained to do, backing me up.
Okay, so let's go to MerrillInstitute.com and check your content out there. And I suppose you are contactable on LinkedIn as well?
Oh, yeah. I'm all over LinkedIn. And, you know, please direct message me. It's a whole new world. It's like learning a new language.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's a language that is super important. Most communication is nonverbal, and you need to be fluent to get around, especially these days, right? When the truth is, you know, being assaulted. Yeah.
David, I've learned so much. This was super interesting, and I didn't know there was so much to it with nonverbal communication, but I'm really intrigued to study this area more. And to be honest, I put way too little emphasis on that or knowing this area in my daily work. So thank you so much for inspiring me. I'm sure you have inspired every listener as well to dive more into this area.